You know, Greg, when you get to the advanced age that, well, let's just say you and I are at these days, you have very few firsts. You see, one of the reasons why I like, you know, teaching beginner hockey school, for example, is because you get to, a chance to watch people have their firsts. First time they are able to take a pass.
First time
they score a goal. First time they stay on site. Like all these kinds of things. You get a first, right? It's
first
a really
time,
important thing.
First time you skate backwards. First time you
That's
put on
a
your
big
helmet
one, yep.
the right way. Yeah. All of them.
First time you do a crossover, you know, all that kind of stuff. And moments before the podcast, I actually had a first as well. And I think you did too. Maybe not. Maybe I'm presumptuous here.
No.
Because ladies and gentlemen of the jury, before the podcast began today, Greg Wyshynski, I got to say this properly here, but FaceTimed me. Greg's FaceTiming me. This is a first. I've never used FaceTime before, but okay, here it goes. And I click
know what you're
on
saying.
And there's no one there.
I know what you're saying, ladies and gentlemen. Any FaceTime Wyshynski has is a butt FaceTime. But no, this is actually a thing where I guess we had spoken. No, you know what it was? I texted you this morning, and then I guess I was my phone wasn't locked, and by some bizarre circumstance, it FaceTimed you through the text message. But here's the thing,
you know,
folks. Like, Jeffy this week had upgraded all of his tech. Like, he is now Jeff Merrick 1.5. And I thought
brought to you by Apple.
Right. I thought old man Apple Merrick was playing around with his new toys. And he's like, oh, FaceTime. And he thought,
what's this?
I'm convinced that if Merrick hits FaceTime on his phone, he thinks it's that game with the little slivers of metal that use the magnet pen to make mustaches on the guy with the bald head. Like, I'm pretty sure he thought that was FaceTime. So I thought that he was testing me. Like, I thought he was so excited he had this new thing that he was going to FaceTime me. And then all of a sudden, you know, we were going to have this new way to communicate.
Strange version of Etch-a-Sketch, but I suppose I'll try it. Okay, that's fine.
Right.
You know, whenever do you always get the? I kind of get this, and when you mentioned to me, I kind of got that same feeling. Do you ever get that sad feeling when you talk to someone, say at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then around 5 o'clock, they pocket dial you, and you say to yourself, "So from 9 o'clock this morning till 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon, you didn't talk to anybody. I'm the last call that you made. Are you lonely? Are you okay? Is everything all right? Not only did you not call anyone, but no one called you because you're the last call registered and it happened so many hours ago. And when that happened with you and me, I thought, oh man, is Greg okay? No one else want to talk to Greggy this morning? Am I the only lifesaver in his life?
I only had one other call and it was do the Bro Jake show in Vancouver. After I texted you.
Oh, yeah.
That was all there was. So, yeah, it was kind of a slow morning. I was really busy, though, this morning.
Thanks.
Thanks for the butt facing.
It's never happened to me before.
Welcome.
The butt face timing. That's it. Thanks, man. That's
good. I didn't have time.
You don't expect that on a Thursday afternoon.
No, not at all. Or any afternoon. Mostly just in the evening. I didn't have time to call anybody on the phone, Jeff Merrick, because I spent my entire morning doing what I think is God's work, which is trolling Winnipeg Jets fans.
Oh, jeez. What? I can't figure you out. All season long, you've loved Winnipeg Jets fans. You've loved the Winnipeg Jets. Everything is pro-Manitoba. This is awesome. And then all of a sudden, like a pro-wrestling villain right out of, you know, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling or Georgia, you turn heel, like on a freaking dime.
I don't like when everybody likes something. And I don't like when Canadians do that Canadians do so well, which is hand out participation ribbons. I made this comparison last night and people were saying that they didn't understand it, but I know you understand it. It was that World Junior vibe last night. It was that thing where it's like, you know, they lost the game, but the kids, they tried so hard, you know. We never criticize any of the kids for a lack of effort, and boy, the fans were so passionate. That's not true.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's a World Junior vibe, but there is that vibe in Canada about hockey.
Because everybody's unique, but
the thing is here, I mean, this is how I'll join this back into the beginning of the podcast with our butt FaceTiming conversation and having firsts. See, what Winnipeg Jets fans are going through, it's a weird kind of first because it's a first for the second time. This goes back to Reservoir Dogs. Not a virgin, but like a virgin. It is a thing that Winnipeg is going through right now whereby, you know, first thing was getting the organization back, getting the franchise back. All of a sudden, there's NHL hockey in Winnipeg again, and hallelujah, that's fantastic. Now, the second hurdle, which still keeps Winnipeg Jets fans enthused and not jaded and not cynical and not bitter, that comes next year, by the way, folks. You want to see Winnipeg Jets fans turn? Let's see if this team doesn't make the playoffs next season. You'll see a completely different fan base in Manitoba, I assure you. But right now, it's still firsts. And this is the first time this version of Winnipeg Jets 2.0 has made the playoffs. So fans are seeing, A, the team has come back, and B, the team has taken a step forward. Would have been nice if they would won a game. It would have been nice to have something legitimate to cheer about at the MTS Center. But I think that was Winnipeg Jets fans saying, at least we're seeing some progress with this team.
I have a problem with a few things with regard to Winnipeg last night. And again, I love the fans. I love the passion. I had actually no problem with the Katy Perry chants. I think that was mocking Corey Perry, comparing him to somebody superficial. I didn't think it was misogynistic. Here's the thing, or sexist. Here's the thing. I understand the love fest for Winnipeg Jets fans, and I understand how amazing the atmosphere was, and oh look, they're the first team in the history of sports to cheer their team after a loss. Wow, that's crazy. They lost both games. Where was all the power? Where was the tidal wave of emotion that was going to carry the Jets to victory? I mean, as I see it, Jeff Merrick, this was a crowd that was all hype, all bluster, all flash, and no results. It was the Alex Ovechkin of crowds.
You see, you know why I loved it? Here's why I loved it, because I've said this before on the podcast. Actually, you and I have talked about this, and every time there's a international tournament, we always come back to this fan base. I love Latvians. I love Latvian hockey fans. And for years and years, and now they're starting to show some sort of modicum of respectability and are developing legitimate hockey players that can graduate to the NHL. These fans just didn't care. They were happy to watch a hockey game and cheer their asses off and be creative and have fun and get starched at games and not, you know, fight each other in the stands, but just like have like a pure celebration, alcohol fueled as it may have been, a pure celebration of the game and of what they're watching. I love Latvian hockey fans. And to me, the closest to a Latvian hockey fan that I've seen in the NHL is in Winnipeg. Now, again, I will say this. It all may change next year. Because now it's like, okay, we got the franchise back, we got into the playoffs, now we need to do something, and if it doesn't happen, I've seen Winnipeg Jets fans turn before, don't be surprised if it happens again. But for now, let them enjoy it.
I have to think back to 88. I have to think back to 88 when the Devils made the playoffs for the first time, and they were the cute, they were the cute little puppy that everybody patted on the head and said, oh, how cute it is that you beat the Islanders and the Capitals and lost to the Bruins in the conference final. But of course, that was a Devils team that actually accomplished something in their first playoff appearance versus laying down like a welcome mat to the Anaheim Ducks. And I guess I'm bothered by two things, Merrick. I'm going to get them off my chest now. The first is that this sweet little puppy that wandered into the Greyhound race that are the Winnipeg Jets, or at least that's how they're being treated, is a team that, correct me if I'm wrong, eliminated the reigning Stanley Cup champions from playoff contention. True or false?
Yes, 100% true.
Okay. So maybe we have slightly higher expectations for this team than we do like some Cinderella team.
I don't know. I still think as much as there are players on there that have, you know, won the Stanley Cup before, hi Andrew Ladd, hi Dustin Byfuglien, this is still a team that's kind of going into the playoffs wide-eyed.
And a team that made a major trade. Added two significant pieces. It's a pretty good team.
Talk to me about the playoff background of Drew Stafford and Tyler Myers.
It's storied. Sonnets have been written. Here's my problem. You had people picking the Jets in this series, and it's as if it's been erased from history. It's like as if someone sent a T-100 back in time and murdered all the parents of the people that picked the Jets. It's like where did all these people go where the Jets were going to win this series? Like the expectations were there that they were going to win, and then they don't. And it's like, oh well, we all knew that they were dog shit. I mean, look at this team. No, I remember people writing stories about, hold on a second. Everybody poo-pooed the Jets this season, but if you look underneath the hood at the analytics, they're a really good team. And that just, like, disappeared last night. The other thing that pissed me off last night was this. I know that every coach handles his shit differently, and I don't think that Paul Maurice was trying to do anything nefarious last night, but something does not sit right with doing the chronicling of injuries 10 minutes after the game ends rather than on getaway day. I know he was asked about Andrew Ladd, but the way it comes off last night was, well, you know, if it weren't for all these injuries, we wouldn't have gotten swept. You got swept! I don't care. You can have an infirmary out there. You got swept. That's
okay.
Such a,
so
it came off as such a little petty excuse last night.
Should nah? I didn't read it that way. I just thought it was the coach answering a question. Sure. Now, what would you have said if Paul Maurice said, "You know what? Now is not the time to talk about injuries."
We'll talk about it later.
Excuse me. The series is over. Why can't you talk about it?
I would have been injured from all the high fives I would have given him, because that would have been a classy thing to do, because otherwise it comes off as this. You just got your ass handed to you by the Anaheim Ducks, and then you go, well, you know, honestly, all of our guys were hurt. Like Anaheim doesn't have injuries. Like Ryan Kesler hasn't been kept together by spit and prayers for the last 2 years. Come on. It came off as being a little cheap.
I was fine.
Well, you have to understand something.
He was asked a question at a time where you can actually give an honest answer about injuries. The first available time asked about injuries, he gave an honest answer. And you're going to blast him for it.
Yeah, I will. I did. I just did. You have to understand that my quota is one Canadian team that I have to like every year. It was Vancouver for a bit this season. It was Winnipeg for a bit this season.
Calgary?
Yes, it's Calgary. Yeah, like I am in the last two, like maybe 9 days, I have ripped the shit out of I'm sorry, the poo poo.
What's that about?
Don't worry about
it. Did you have a conversation with someone?
You know, sometimes people overreact to things, and trying to keep it clean, Merrick. I mean, after all, I mean, this is a property that is owned by two corporations, unlike other things in life, like my Twitter feed.
Hang on, did you have a conversation with someone? Really? I didn't know about this.
I can't get into it. But suffice it to say, if you're a follower of my Twitter feed, perhaps you saw the same picture published twice. With a nasty curse word, you never hear every day in life, even on broadcast television. And then the second time with what will be now going forward, the proper modulation of such words, kaka poo poo pee pee is what we'll say from now on, just to make sure that everyone's on the up and up.
Reducing the intellectual level of our lives in Saturday morning cartoons.
I can't
Don't
get
worry about it.
It.
Move on. Man. Turn on the page. I know where you're coming from. Turn the page.
It's just one of those things. Anyway, I've given heaping amounts of caca poo poo to the Edmonton Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets in the last couple of days. But the Flames are my team now. I love Willie DeJardin. I think he's been out coaching this series. I wouldn't mind if the Canucks won the series because I like the Sedins and I like DeJardin. But that said, Calgary Anaheim is all kinds of sexy in that second round. Oh man, the little whippersnappers against Getzlaff and Perry, Jonas Hiller,
returning to try to defeat
the Ducks and the guy replaced them. Oh God, give me that series right now. Give me it
tomorrow. You know what's weird about that one? If it is indeed the Flames and the Ducks, it would be Jonas Hiller who's pissed off at an organization for not trading him.
Right, exactly. Like,
let the psychology of that sink in for a second. For not moving him at deadline last year.
Let me see if I have this right. Wyshynski is mad at the Winnipeg fan base because media who picked the Jets disappeared last night. I'm not mad at their fan base. I'm just mad at the whole thing. I'm not mad. I'm just bugged by the whole thing. I'm bugged by the participation ribbon. I'm bugged by the gold star. Like, the minute they lose a series, get swept on home ice. Don't even put up a fight in this series. A team that made the playoffs, one of 16. One of 16 teams with a shot at the cup, and they just hand the keys over to the Kings. Kings don't go out in four. My problem is that there's absolutely not a shred of criticism for this team on the night they're eliminated in a sweep in the first round. They didn't even improve on what the Thrashers accomplished. Do you understand what I'm telling you? They couldn't even win a game. They're the Thrashers North. I'm perturbed by the fact that there is not a shred of criticism for this team and their effort in this series and how things went down and Andre Pavlik turning into a sieve again. I'm perturbed by the fact that this team gets a golden ticket pass through this season just because of the circumstances of making the playoffs. It perturbs me that that's the case. Like, it's not simply just, my God, imagine if they had an actual goaltender. Imagine if this guy wasn't, you know, didn't turn into a pumpkin in game one. You know, it's now it's that it's just like, well, you know what? The fans really gave it their all, and attaboy, and good job, and get them next time, and the Ducks were just a better team. Where was the Ducks were the better team throughout all of the build-up to the series, by the way? Where was it?
I was guilty of it, too. And
I know.
And so were you. We all got caught up in the story. It was a wonderful story. And if you're always... this is the bane of picking. And God, this is one of the reasons why I can't... Hey, what are your picks? Hey, what are your picks? You know what my pick is? I don't have a frickin' clue. I have no idea who's going to win a hockey game.
Yeah.
I can't tell you. I have no idea who's going to win between the Ducks and the Vancouver Canucks for Calgary Flames. I have an idea of who I think is a better team, but really, I don't know who's going to win, and I kind of like watching hockey games based on I don't know who's going to win. Isn't that kind of the draw of sports? Do you don't know who's going to win? Mm. Isn't that part of it? Anyway, and then you get the Jabrones online. Oh, some expert you are picking the Jets over the Anaheim Ducks. Who do you think? You should get off Twitter and quit your job. You don't know anything. No, I don't know who's going to win a hockey game. I have no clue. Nor does anybody else. Hmm. Can't we just enjoy a hockey game?
Sure.
Can we just enjoy a series, enjoy a hockey game, and say, oh, well, that was rather interesting. Okay, what's next? Okay, what's the next series here?
Don't you find it to be a little weird? Okay, I'm just going to say this. I'm just going to leave this here, okay? Because right. You know how I feel about the Winnipeg media a little bit. Who is the only player to receive massive amounts of criticism out of this playoff series against the Ducks? Who's the only guy?
Well, Dustin Byfuglien.
Yeah. Okay. Just leave that there.
Well, he didn't do himself any favors with the Marshawn Lynch.
Oh, no, no. Marshawn Lynch. The thing on Perry.
Well, there was a suspension before that.
Stuff keeps happening. I don't know what it is.
Oh, jeez. Well, I know where you're going. Let's get to our guest, though.
All right. Well, we'll talk about the whiteout later. Joining us down the line, of course, is John Buccigross of ESPN, our good friend, and he comes back on this show. I wanted to get Bucci on earlier this week because we were going back and forth on the Twitters, but I also wanted to get him on specifically before we get into playoff stuff to talk about a true American hero, Jack Eichel. Bucci, you there?
I'm here.
Hey, there you are, buddy. The creator of the Bucci Overtime Challenge that me and Dave Lozo had fun doing puns about last night.
That was good. I enjoyed that.
The Stanley Tucci Overtime Challenge, the Gucci Overtime Challenge, the Susan Lucci Overtime Challenge.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Bucci, let's talk about Jack Eichel for a second because he is obviously going to be a Buffalo Sabre. There is a sense of separation between himself and McDavid that's pretty palpable. Tell us, in your opinion, what you think we're going to get out of Jack Eichel, when all is said and done as a pro. Do the Buffalo Sabres have the foundational center that they tank their season to acquire?
I think so. Right from the beginning, when I first saw him play, he reminded me of Ryan Getzlaff. Now he's not going to quite be as tall or as heavy as Getzlaff. His body will be more Jonathan Toews, 6'2", 215. He's a beast in the weight room. He was a 17-year-old when BU started this year. He's 18 now, and he was, you know, cleaning and all the weight room stuff. He was big numbers, so natural strength already. As a 17-year-old, he moves like Getzlaff. He's a pass first center, passes like Adam Oates, incredible sense of the game, beautiful feathery passes, looks to set others up, has always made other players better since he was 12. Yet he also has an NHL caliber shot. He has a slap shot and a wrist shot that is high, high level, much like Getzlaff. Sometimes Getzlaff doesn't shoot enough in my mind. But to me, the way he moves, the way he floats around, his strength, uses a real long hockey stick, so he's able to protect the puck really well when he comes down the wing. He's going to be a powerful guy. And I just think he's, you know, how high, we just don't know. You know, he's 18. Will he be that A-plus guy? Will he be the B-plus guy? I really think he's going to be that A guy that's going to play for 15, 20 years, play 1,000 games, get 1,000 points, go to the Hall of Fame, stuff like that. I really do. It's, you know, it's a bit reach, a bit bold, this part of the game. But I really believe that. And people think the gap between Crosby and Getzlaff is like huge. And McDavid's kind of like that Crosby incredible highlight plays at 100 miles an hour player. But the gap between Crosby and Getzlaff, in my mind, is not huge at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the gap between McDavid and Getzlaff will end up being huge as well.
Interestingly enough, too, those two, well, I mean, Tyler Seguin and Taylor Hall, and I guess Gretzky and Lemieux always were tied together, too. But by way of draft, these two, regardless of what they say and where they go and how they behave and what happens to them, these two, even though they haven't skated an inch, or in Canada we call it a centimeter, of NHL ice, these two will forever be linked and forever will be measured against one another, true or false.
Yeah, probably. It depends how their arc goes. I don't think Hall and Seguin are as attached now because Hall's been in Siberia, hockey-wise, geographically, and because the team is rancid. And Seguin's now changed teams. So I think that's changed a little bit where Ovi and Crosby are on the same team still, how they're kind of linked, even though it's a different draft. But, so I know what you mean. But, so if they, you know, if Eichel becomes a staple, which I think he will, and McDavid becomes a staple, which I think he will, then yeah. And then that link should happen for at least 10 years. Who knows if they move on to UFA and then that still holds together. But as long as they're in the same team, I think you kind of need the players to remain on their original teams to be linked as, to the utmost.
Let me ask you one follow-up here on Jack Eichel as well. And we just all assume that he's going to go number two and he'll turn pro and he'll go to the Buffalo Sabres. And I had a conversation with someone who covers U.S. or covers Division I really, really closely and follows it really closely, who said, you know, Jack Eichel, when he was awarded, you know, team MVP at BU with the Terriers, you know, couldn't even get through his speech, was really emotional, said it was the greatest year of his life, really loved playing for BU. Percentage-wise, John, is there a chance that he goes back for another year?
Very outside. I'll put that at 5 to 10%. I was told that he's going to wait until after the draft. I think that's out there now. But I was originally told that he's thinking about it. But the full expectation of BU, the hockey department at BU, is that he will be in the NHL next year. That the gap between his play and many of the college players he plays against is just too big to do him much good. Like I said, strength-wise, he's already strong enough. He can get stronger at the NHL level. Hopefully he'll be managed well and given a game off every 10 games. That's how I would do it. I think NHL teams should be more aggressive throughout their roster, resting players. They can afford to do that. They seem to only do it when players get suspended. I think these guys should be playing 70 to 75 games. There's no reason to play them all. I'd rest them on the road to protect the season ticket holder. But it's a very small percentage. Yes, he's emotional. I think he enjoyed being home. I think he was kind of blindsided by the vitriol on social media and all the disgusting comments that he gets. I think that kind of caught him by surprise. And that was, I think a lot of the emotion came from that. That was probably some hurt coming out. That was probably some, man, I've been through a lot this whole year. I didn't realize people thought that way and said those things. It didn't happen when I was on the national team or for the junior Bruins skating in a Foxborough rink. You know, now he was really exposed to, wow, people saying nasty things and mean things. And I think that really blindsided him a bit. And so I think a lot of that was the emotion coming out. But no, the full expectation is that he will be in the NHL next year.
Although reading between the lines here, he stays at BU. They give Evander Kane another year to rehab his injury. They go with a Chad Johnson, Anders Lindback battery, and then trade both of them during the season. Tank part due. Austin Matthews is a Saber.
No, absolutely. It worked. As far as a master plan, that would be the best thing. Probably the best thing for Eichel in many ways. Like you said, to get another top six forward for sure. If he were to stay in school, Buffalo is almost guaranteed to get another top six forward. And they probably need another one of those. You know, that works out well sometimes, and how it worked out well for the Penguins. And when you get those, or Taves and Kane, that can change a franchise for 15 years. And you can get back-to-back Hall of Famers, back-to-back, you know, first ballot generational Hall of Famers. And I've talked to many people who think Austin Matthews is better than Jack Eichel. they really, really equate him to Jonathan Toews, as just a beast of a competitor with the talent. Obviously, Toews is on a high-end offensive guy. Eichel's going to score more points than Jonathan Toews in the NHL. But in terms of the all-around game, and I still think Eichel's going to turn into an all-around player, back-checker, face-off guy. Like I said, off-wing power play one time where Ovechkin and Stamkos go. He could do that. He could operate on, you know, on the other side and distribute. Either way, he could play either position. That's what makes him so great. But Matthews, like I said, some people think he's better, and he compares to a Toews type of guy. So, yeah, that would be a great plan to have if you could execute it.
That would be an interesting plan. Bucci, your thoughts on to close out this draft talk. You okay with Edmonton and McDavid or what there? By the way, I got to hop off for like 2 minutes here, Merrick. I'll be right back.
Okay, yeah, I'll talk to John. That's cool.
Is he going poopy? What's he doing?
I don't know. He's going to go. Greg's had a weird day. I don't know. He butt FaceTimed me with his iPhone, so it's kind of gone downhill from there, John.
Interesting. All right. Well, I'm enjoying an awesome breakfast sandwich myself. I make the best breakfast sandwiches in North America. But, you know, overall, no. I don't know if it's the best thing, obviously, for him, the NHL. It's a city with real people, and it's a real team, and it could end up being really good really soon. And that's a lot more fun than being in Southern California with a bad team, not that either of them are, or in an 8 month winter place with a really good team. You're always going to pick that. You can, you're on the road a lot. You're not doing a whole bunch during the season anyway, and you can live wherever you want in the off season. So I think once he realizes that, it'll be interesting. I'm actually doing a podcast myself for ESPN, and I'm going to ask Ryan Whitney, who played in Edmonton, kind of go through that. I mean, what's he thinking? What's McDavid thinking? What's it like to play in Edmonton? From so many standpoint, from a girlfriend, wife situation, from a how you feel that you're exposed and marketed. Can you do that up there in this day and age? Would players prefer to play elsewhere? And how that has changed when he came in late? So I'm really curious to hear what Ryan has to say about that and how he thinks it could play out.
And having to be on 24/7 as a hockey player as opposed to some other markets. Hey, let's segue here to the NHL and the Pittsburgh Penguins last night. They dropped one overtime style to the New York Rangers. Kevin Hayes, the OT hero last night. The inevitable will happen here. The Penguins will bow out in the first round to the New York Rangers. We suspect as early as Friday. At which point, is this a scene out of Pulp Fiction? When it all comes down, does a team just get decimated? What happens to the Penguins this offseason when inevitably they lose to the Rangers?
Yeah, right. I thought they'd get swept. That was my pick. And obviously I was off by one, and I thought it was a great effort when they won that game, too. Brandon Sutter's been, I think,
their best
player.
Yep.
Never thought he would evolve with this kind of player when they made that trade. Even the first year, I just thought, hey, he's a good player, but he doesn't seem to – didn't seem to be intense enough for me, but now forever. But he's really brought his game up to another. He was hitting his stride, hitting his prime. Mm-hmm. That's one guy I would keep and lock up if they can do that. But yeah, I think. I mean, look at their defense. I mean, they're just decimated. They have AHL players playing there, and would Letang have made a difference in their off and others? I think so a little bit. I mean, hey, they could have even the series at home there in Game 4, and so I think it's close. And you got to be, but how they have signed and hired underlings, and they've been keep trying to do that. But of course, it starts with Crosby. And just overall, I think that's an interesting story. Just lately, the last 2, 3, 4 years, he just doesn't seem to have a fire to me. Just an over my dead body mentality that Jonathan Toews has, and that the Blackhawks core seems to have, where they play every game like it's life or death. I've always kind of called the Penguins the last few years a wine and cheese franchise. I just think they've kind of been kind of like that at times, maybe some hubris, but maybe it does come down more to injuries and there's more there that meets the eye. And so it's hard to make those evaluations far and away, but it just looks like they don't have that over my dead body mentality, from the important people. But yeah, again, the support, how they've hired, and how they've signed players on the support level, and then the massive injuries on defense, maybe a combination of that too. The rest of that core just isn't strong enough. So time will tell, but it's an interesting story. The coach and the GM, who's going to be the GM, will Mark Bergevin end up with Mario. I think his contract is up. Would you bring him in? Does Babcock want to coach Sidney Crosby? And they had this huge press conference with Bergeron and Babcock, and it's just, you know, they can do it. They're a fun franchise from that standpoint. Off ice and on ice, they're very interesting.
I got kicked out of the place I was in, but now I'm back.
Hey, welcome back, Potter.
It happens here at Yahoo. When we did trade deadline, I was here at Yahoo headquarters, and I thought I had booked a room for the entire day, but it turns out you can only book it in 2-hour increments. So a man with a fancy mustache evicted me and Sean Leahy from our trade deadline headquarters. So it's like it's a constant shuffle, a constant hustle, all that jive. And there you go. I was listening to your Babcock conversation. I'm so fascinated by the coaching derby we're going to see, because not only do you have these guys that are going to be fresh out of jobs, potentially like Babcock if he leaves and McClellan and stuff, but then you have this deep bench of guys that I think could coach tomorrow if they wanted to. Bylsma, Tortorella, the Guy Boucher, Pete DeBoer, all these guys. Do you think at the end of the day, Bucci, that we're going to see more retready guys, or do you think that we might still have a trend of AHL guys and assistant coaches getting their crack?
Yeah, it's a great point, because, you know, you have obviously people like John Cooper who come up, they're fresh and they have ideas and they're successful right off the bat, and they kind of give an organization like the Lightning, they kind of give it a nice little branding, because it's a new fresh guy and not another guy. But in the end, winning's the most important. Yeah, there are now too many qualified coaches for teams, and that is definitely the case. And I think we're producing better players, better coaches, and there's going to be more players and coaches than there are jobs. And these jobs are so valuable. I always laugh when people, whatever sport it is, Buffalo or Bills or some other organization, why is he taking that job? Well, because it's 4 years, $12 million. Tell me where they're going to get another job, 4 years, $12 million. That's why they take the job. It's a job. They need a job. They have mortgages and bills and tuition payments, and they need jobs. That's why they take those jobs. They're valuable. There's only so many of them. So that will be interesting to watch. Is a nice core of coaches out there. Babcock, and because of that, Babcock is going to get a huge contract. I can see him getting 5 years for $5 million. Maybe I'm dreaming, but I don't think the Red Wings. I don't think the Red Wings want to go more than 3.5. And I think it's going to be a money thing. Terry Pegula will write any check necessary, and we know Toronto is desperate. And it's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be an amazing offseason in my mind, because of Pittsburgh and Bergeron and Babcock, and you mentioned McClellan and Philly, and Ed Schneider will write a check. It's going to be great.
And when you look at the Detroit trickle-down effect as well, you know who's poised? I mean, there's not one coach, but there's two coaches in that organization that are poised for big off seasons. One is, of course, Mike Babcock, and everyone's chasing him. The other is the coach that Detroit wouldn't let anyone talk to, and that's Jeff Blashill, who coaches the Grand Rapids Griffins. And if you look at the next transition of AHL guys to the NHL, man, I'm looking squarely at Jeff Blashill. Either he's getting an NHL job somewhere outside of Detroit, or he'll be the Detroit Red Wings' next head coach next season.
That's why Detroit is kind of in a quandary. They got to act quickly, because what if someone swoops in and gets Blashill? And that kind of happened a long time ago, many, many moons ago, when Barry Melrose won a Calder Cup in Adirondack. And everyone assumed, and Red Wings assumed, he would, you know, take this rancid franchise that was really not doing too well and kind of start the rebuild. But L.A. swooped in, and Bruce McNall gave him a check he couldn't refuse. Barry's a loyal guy, and he would have, you know, prefer to stay in Detroit. They gave him the chance, and he finished up there. Then the minor league, he won a championship at juniors, won a championship at the AHL. But then Bruce McNall came in, and what if someone does that to the Red Wings as well? And then Babcock leaves. So I think they want to get an answer soon from Babcock as soon as the season's over, so to kind of prevent that from happening.
Good stuff. Bucci, last one for me. You're looking around this league, you're looking around at the playoff brackets, all that stuff. Any team right now that is surprised you in a positive or negative way thus far?
Well, before last night, the Blues were certainly a quandary and a mystery on how they've struggled in the postseason, even after incredible regular seasons. Last night made me feel a little bit better. They were my preseason cup pick.
Me too.
So certainly people always give me a hard time when you hate the Rangers, you love the Rangers, you hate the Penguins, you love the Penguins. I'm like, we root for our predictions because we want to be smart, because we're men and we want to raise. So maybe if our employer thinks we're really smart, they'll give us more money because we predicted who would win the Metropolitan Division. Of course, that's all fantasy land. That's how they think. We're men. So I root for my predictions. So I certainly hope the Blues can pull it out. Everything else, I'm impressed with the Islanders' fight. Although, of course, the backstrom goal might have changed things there. They were in a great position. But overall, maybe the one thing is the Rangers. I was real bullish on the Rangers from the middle of the season. I said, this team's going to the Cup again. But the Penguins, again, like I said, they almost evened it up last night. And so I just wonder if the Rangers have enough dynamic play up front as they move on and the playoffs roll on. Do they have enough to finish the job, get to the finals, and get that Cup? Because last year, obviously, they were so close. And so my eyes a little bit on the Rangers. Did I overrate them just a tad as we go at the midway point and then as we enter the postseason?
That's how I'm feeling about Tampa right now, is did I overrate them a little bit?
Because I mean, Stamkos is hurt. Stamkos is hurt, guys.
Oh, you
and that's a killer. I mean, when you see Stamkos lining up on the power play in front of the net, you know he's hurt. And Tyler Johnson's in the one-time spot. You know that Stamkos is hurt.
Shoulder. Hey, that sounds like a shoulder injury.
Yeah. Well, he's not taking one-timers for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. This time of year, as you know, there's so many shoulder injuries.
100%. Before we let you go, John, I haven't heard you answer this one before. We know you, of course, for a number of things. One, of course, the OT challenge. What's your favorite overtime game ever?
Ooh, wow, good question.
Wow. The one that really sticks out was the Peter Klima game. And not so much.
Oh, yeah.
Sat
on the bench.
Sat
on the bench.
And he sat on the bench. But also that Glenn Wesley had a wide open backhand completely. Yeah. You know, the goalie was laying on the ice and just wide open. And he just threw it off the glass. It almost hit the red light. There was no netting back then, but if there was, it almost hit the netting. And so that one, and plus the other one is the Keith Jones. I wrote about it in the book I wrote with him in five overtimes. And the best part of that, two part story. One, he's coming off the bench for the line change, and he's thinking, guys, too many men on the ice. Everyone's coming over the boards. But the game was just won after Primo's wrist shot past Tugnutt. So that was the one part. And then he came down the ice and screamed, hey, that's my plus. I wasn't on the bench yet. I want a plus for that. But look at but then the best part is the next year they gave him a frame box score. This is a five overtime game. Jonesy had no stats on his line. I'm talking no goals, assists, shots, hits, takeaways. It was completely zero right across the board. He's got a framed picture of that box score that his buddies of the organization get him. So that one, those two are one that certainly stand out to me.
That is awesome. Bucci, thanks for joining us again, man.
Thank
it's always
you.
Good to have you back, and you're the best, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Peace out. Booyahzi. Love you guys.
There you go.
John.
Thanks, John.
Bucci Gras, who used to come right into your bedroom every night.
He did.
With Chicken Parm, back when he was known as Chicken Parm. Now he's like
Chicken Parm.
Ray Ferraro, Chiasin, blah, blah. No, he's
awesome.
Chicken Parm back then.
Ray's fantastic. Ray is, he's like, honestly, have you ever heard Ray on radio?
Yeah. Oh, he's amazing.
Oh, so good.
Professorial.
Really good.
Probably the smartest analyst since John Davidson left the game to go put on a suit. Or a different suit, a better suit. Probably the as far as level of insight, as far as entertainment, as far as like walking away from a conversation, thinking that you've learned so much more about the game than you knew beforehand.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
You know what's great about John, and I knew him more from Hockey Night in Canada than the Rangers broadcasts, but John on the satellite hot stove every week. I mean, John had the cachet that he could call and did call, you know, sort of – everyone around the NHL and say, look, for the good of the game, you know, we need to, you know, generate news and things to talk about. I need something for the hot stove this weekend. And every Saturday, John Davidson delivered the goods.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one area that to me, I mean, he understands the game, analyzes the game, delivered in a very compelling way. But to me, the one thing that I will always point to with John Davidson is he was always able to go and get something. He was like the anthropologist. Go and get something and bring it back and share it with everybody. That was the great thing that JD did on Hockey Night every week.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny to think that there are generations of fans that probably don't know that ESPN back in the day used to be a little punk rock about their hockey coverage. I mean, the NHL Tonight with Bucci Gras and Ray Ferraro was very, very much sort of like, hey, kids, let's put on a show. That's the vibe. That was the vibe. I mean, like, people think about ESPN and their coverage of hockey or lack thereof on SportsCenter, and when the NHL was on, it was, you know, pushed to the side in favor of Texas Hold'em and shit like that.
poop like that. the point is, though, is that, like, when NHL Tonight was doing its thing, there was, like, nothing like it on the air, and there still isn't.
Yeah,
I mean, like, the traditional studio show that you see on NBC pales in comparison to the vibe that Buccigross and Ferraro were able to develop on that show. It was a lot of fun, and I think maybe it wasn't as appreciated as it should have been at the time, because ESPN 2 was in a different place, and frankly, hockey's coverage on ESPN was in a different place too. All right,
you know, I remember one quick little aside here. I remember when I first started at Sportsnet. I remember Kyprios calling me, and it was my first job was to do the Hockey Central, which is a recap show at the end of the night. On Sportsnet, and Kipper called me and said, you know what you need to do, Merrick? I said, what's that, Kip? He said, you need to turn that show, first of all, you need to make that show your own and turn it into, find a way to turn it into something like John and Ray used to do. Mm-hmm. Make it yours, you know, have mm-hmm. that, make it, to your point, Wish, make it a little bit punk rock, make it distinctive,
yeah.
Go and do what John and Ray used to do.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
He's right.
Let's, in the remaining moments, let's do a Wednesday favorite on Thursday, shall we?
Do you want to do a mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Sarcastic Mike writes in, who are the best two-way and or defensive wings in the NHL, a.k.a. the real Selke? Now, Selke Noms out yesterday. Bergeron, your winner. Taves and Kopitar. I will say I did not have Kopitar in my top three. I had David
Backus.
Who'd you have? I had Backus in my top three. Taves, Backus, my top three. Then Kopitar, and then the answer to this question, which is Marian Hossa.
The answer is Marian Hossa. Funny, we've always made this point, too. Consider who this trophy was made for specifically. Bob Gainey. I mean, everyone around the NHL said, you know what? No one does what Bob does. There really should be a trophy that we can give Bob every year for doing what Bob does. Mm-hmm. Let's come up with this thing called the best defensive forward in the NHL, the Selke Trophy, just so Bob can have something. He's such a great hockey player. We just don't have an award for him. He was a winger, folks. The award was essentially created for a winger, but now it's the exclusive domain over centerman.
Right. I think the last guy before Hossa that really got the love was Yuri Lehtinen.
Yuri Lehtinen.
And maybe Zetterberg, too, if you consider him a wing. I guess he's a pivot. But the guy that I'll always hold up as a Devils fan as the quintessential defensive winger who probably should have gotten Selke love but never did was Jay Pandolfo. Like, Pandolfo and Madden, to me, were an all-world shutdown pairing, and Pandolfo was a huge factor in that.
Here's a question. I was talking about this last night, or two nights ago. I can't remember. The days all blur together on TV. When is Nick Backstrom going to get some love for Selke?
I don't know, but I think if the Capitals win, he's going to win the Conn Smythe.
Could be. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
That's the smart pick.
Yep.
GM320 writes in, I had a chili cheese dog the other day and wondered, is chili a condiment? Well, no. Cheese is a condiment. Chili on a hot dog is like eating salami and ham on a sandwich. They're two different items put together in a beautiful symphony of meat, but the cheese is the condiment in that setup. Wouldn't you agree, Jeff Merrick?
You know, and a lot of things that I read in my life and a lot of the podcasts that I listen to, a lot of it revolves around boundary dissolution and trying to find out the way things are more similar than their difference. So I can see chili. You mentioned Zetterberg being a bit. I can see chili being that pivot, because I can see chili on. Yeah, I can see it being both. I'm not going to put. Hey, nobody puts chili in a corner. I'm not going to put chili in a corner here, Greg Wyshynski. All right, I can see it as both. I'm cool with chili being both.
Armin Patel writes in, this is one that you'll appreciate. Why does it seem like linesmen do all the hard work usually doing face-offs and breaking up scrums? Should the referees do more? Why is it the linesmen that do all the work, Merrick?
Well, it's because the referees have to be there to watch what happens so they can call the penalties. When you're in the middle of trying to grab a guy and hold a guy and pull this guy off of him, you're going to miss some stuff because, you know, you're going to have the back to some of your plays. In extreme situations where it's, you know, life or death moments, the referee will get involved and should get involved. But by and large, no, it's the referee's job to stand back and assess what's happening and assert and award the penalties. when the linesmen, you're right, and that's why these guys are gym dogs.
Right.
Well, the linesmen all have to get in there and break up the scrums and break up the fights. Although, you know what I would do? You want to put an end to all of it? Paul Stewart used to do this as well. When there's a scrum in front and they're pushing and shoving and glove in the face. Because what the players are saying essentially is, I want to look tough, but I don't really want to do anything. I'm just going to do this until the linesmen break it up. I would just pull the linesmen out.
Yeah.
And it would make for some long games initially, while these scrums sort of wear themselves out. But I would just call the players bluff. It's like, all right, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Reese Albrecht writes in, this will be the last one because we have to go. Peter Chiarelli's revenge. Think you know where this is going. Stay with me as I spin a hypothetical. Bob Nicholson cleans house in Edmonton and brings in Peter Chiarelli as the GM. Peter Chiarelli was GM when the Bruins drafted Dougie Hamilton. Boston is looking at a pretty significant cap crunch next year with Hamilton as an RFA. Does Chiarelli offer sheet Hamilton as an FU to the team that canned him?
Edmonton doesn't need the picks anymore, but there's no Boston would have to find a way to match that one. It is an interesting one. There's a couple of candidates out there, and I think maybe the more interesting one, Dougie Hamilton is an interesting one, and Chiarelli scooping him, much like he scoops Zdeno Chara in Ottawa to kick off his managerial work
all
in
of this
Boston
has happened
is
before
symmetry.
Will happen again. Yeah.
I know. Man, if you're Pittsburgh, do you think about doing that same thing to Brandon Saad?
For the Pittsburgh guy?
Yeah.
No, but Chicago will match because they're going to clear Sharp off the books.
They will clear Sharp off the books. Here's the other thing about Edmonton. Would it surprise you if Peter Chiarelli is the general manager and Craig McTavish becomes team president?
Oh, I see. I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
What's up? Claude Julien's the head coach?
Craig McTavish says, you know what? We got ourselves a shiny new toy in that toy chest. I'm coming down.
Behind the bench.
Yeah, I'm staying right here. Todd, what's your face? You seem like a good guy. You can stay on and be my helper. But it's
Todd,
Craig's. It's Craig's show now. It's the Craig show. It's Mac T night, baby.
Mac T time.
Mac T time.
Mac T time. Mac T time, baby.
Oh God! And then you think about Edmonton always missing the playoffs. Mac T time.
Oof. Yep.
That's great.
Thanks. I get one a week.
But I could see that happening for sure. Where does Kevin Lowe go? What fake position do they make up for him?
That's the big question around
President
Edmonton right now.
President of Arena Business Development and Oiler Memorabilia.
It's the Monty Burns Outstanding Achievement in the Field of Excellence Award.
That's right. Now, I could totally see exactly what you're talking about happening, and it sounds like there's definitely some smoke there with Chiarelli. We'll see if there's smoke there also with McClellan. I have the suspicion that Boston hangs on to Claude Julien. What do you think?
I have a suspicion too, but we'll see who the new general manager is, and if it's a Cam Neely loyalist, then it might be dangerous times for Claude Julien.
Oh, by Cam Neely loyalist, you of course mean Mike Milbury.
Hey, I gotta hustle, but go. I want to end on one quick note. A very good friend of mine by the name of Suzanne Crew passed away yesterday. She'd been fighting cancer for some months, and I would go and see her in the hospital before going to Hockey Central on Saturday. She passed away yesterday at the age of 41, after a long struggle.
So young.
And I know it's horrible. And her husband Mike was a complete. Loyal, like stayed, bedside 24/7, which is a wonderful man. I'm not going to end it with, appreciate everything you have and hug your kids and all that kind of stuff. But I will say this, every now and then you get these moments where you say to yourself, I need to live my life to the fullest because you really don't know when it's going to end. If you're thinking about doing something, whether it's reading a book, having an experience, doing whatever, go and do it. Like, go and do it today. Get the fuck off Twitter, okay? So get off all that nonsense. Go and do it today. Go and do it this weekend, because one day you either will not be able to or you won't want to anymore. I'll leave you with that one. Go and do it. If you're thinking about whatever it is, and everyone has a different life and a different agenda and different things that they want to experience in their lives, but honestly, go and do it, because you won't be able to one day,
or you won't want to anymore, and it'll make you a more complete person if you do so. So God bless Suzanne Crew, and condolences to the family and friends of that wonderful woman that I called a friend for 15 years.
You're here. Thanks to John Butchergrass for joining us, and thanks to Maddie behind the glass. We'll be back tomorrow. You making a cameo tomorrow? You'll be able to.
I think I'll do the whole show. I got another phlebotomy tomorrow at 1 o'clock, but I can race back.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, that's the one where they use the vacuum to cut your hair, right?
No, that's the Flobo.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Not the phlebotomy. This is the one where I get I get leeches on me.
My promise to you, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow will mark the triumphant return of Game Show Friday. Oh, it looks like Merrick's
Gotta reschedule that phlebotomy.
Look at
that. Gotta go. Yeah.
Oh, look at that. It's a double Flobo tomorrow. Don't have time for shows. All right, everybody. Enjoy hockey tonight. We didn't really cover all the many games beyond the one that the Winnipeg won, but good on the Blues, and good on Craig Anderson and the Sens for extending that series, by the way, giving their home fans a chance to cheer.
Look at you, Mike Hoffman. All right, I got a punt.
Go. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.